All right, by way of review, we finished up Genesis 39 last week. Please turn to Genesis 40. All right, go in your Bibles. Please turn to Genesis chapter 40. Genesis chapter 40. Last week, I did my best to introduce this chapter. I mentioned that number one, Joseph's fact that he's a human being really is going to come out in this chapter. That's like, okay, he's real. This guy was just like us. I'm not going to make that big of a deal of it. You're going to see it in the text. But the other thing I mentioned is the fact that Joseph goes through a bunch of new temptations and trials in this chapter. And I think if you were honest with yourself, maybe this is one of those things that you failed to see in Joseph's story. Because there's little things in this chapter that I think are a really, really big deal. That when we gloss over chapter 4, we think, oh, yeah, it's the dreams, Joseph interprets them, he's in prison, and that's it. There's way more going on than that, all right? So stay focused when we're reading the large chunks of the text. That is the second thing I mentioned last week. The one big thing that you miss right off the bat, unless you're being very careful looking at all the different times happening in the story, is the fact of how long Joseph's in prison. How long did I suggest that scholars estimate, looking at the time? How long?
10.
Yeah, roughly 10 years. Could be a little bit more than that. That's how long he has been in prison. Yeah, that's brutal. That's significant. Right? So this is a really long trial that he's going through. Rhetorical question. Have you ever had a moment in your life, in your past, where you were going through something really, really, really painful, not necessarily physically painful. I mean, the stuff we go through psychologically is so often way worse than physical suffering. But you were going through something so terrible that you wanted it to end immediately, that you wanted relief, that you were looking for things to change. And maybe you had a date and a point in time you're like, this is going to be over. It's got to be over at least by this point. We should have some change. Things will go better. And then when it gets to that point, it's like your feet are knocked out from under you, and it's like your soda can and the trash compactor, and it's just you're crushed. Your hopes, your dreams, what you imagined is all ruined. Sometimes we go through suffering that lasts a whole lot longer than we want. For example, me thinking about our church, there are people that have lost jobs, and got jobs in the past, or there's those that are still looking now. Those that are doing the soul-destroying thing of putting in applications. I know what that's like. That's boring, and it's terrible. Okay, that's a trial. You know, you're waiting for that phone call, and it may or may not ever come. There's that. There are people that are going through health issues, whether they're young or whether they're old. Things that, you know, no one asks for, but they have to deal with. They have to change their diet. They have to go through treatments. They have to go through chemo. All these things that have all these different added connections. Like, oh, now it's medical bills and all this stuff. And your time is wasted, you feel like. Like, I'm never going to get that time back. Those types of scenarios where things last forever. Seemingly, you have those that honestly would love to be in a relationship in our church. And for whatever reason, it's not happening. Or they're in a relationship and it's just not progressing forward as they would imagine that they would like it to. You have, I guarantee you about this, the missionaries that we support on our missionary board over there. And I know we just got the new picture of the Schley lines up top. It's really cool. I guarantee you that we have missionaries that would love to see more fruit in their ministries. They put in 50, 60 hours a week and it's like, I wish there was more. We have suffering, guys, that lasts longer than we often like. We're just not patient people. It's one of the things that we deal with. But anyways, so Joseph's 10 years in this prison. That, I argue, is the first trial of Genesis chapter 40. Now let's go back to the chapter. I know I read some of these verses before last week, but just as a refresher, let's go back to verse 1. Okay, we're all there. Let's look at verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And the Pharaoh was wroth. Okay, this is a word for meaning really, really angry. God felt this way after, remember the children of Israel get out of Egypt? Okay, Joseph's story is right before the Exodus. Remember the Exodus? Remember that God's doing miracle and miracle and miracle for his chosen people. And then he's giving all these promises saying, hey, guess what? If you follow me and you trust in me and you don't make these stupid pagan idol gods, and you don't go after them, I'm going to bless you. And guess what? I have a land for you. And it's not just any land. This is a land full of milk and honey, and it's just for you. And they sent out the spies, and they're like, no, our God's not big enough to deal with this problem. And that's how angry God got. The same Hebrew word here for the Pharaoh was wroth. Why is he angry? Against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers, against the chief of the bakers, and he put them in the ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in the ward. Oftentimes, in Egyptian culture back then, if someone did something bad, they would just throw them in prison. You know, there's no sentence, no, okay, you're out in 2 years. They wouldn't know that. It was like a holding cell. Whether they were forgotten about or not, it didn't really matter to them. That was life. Verse 5. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, and the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. So you have two guys that have broken the law. They've infuriated the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh throws them in this prison. This is the same prison that Joseph's in. Joseph is going to interact with these men. The question is, how would you react to these men if you were in Joseph's shoes? How would you react to these two men if you were in Joseph's shoes? I want you to think of it this way. Let's say you break your leg. I hope not, okay? Let's just say you break your leg for some stupid reason, all right? So you're, I don't know, leaving some building. There's a flight of stairs. There's some ice, which is highly likely considering our season. You hit the ice. You were trying to be careful. It shouldn't have happened. Whatever. It happens. You fall down the flight of stairs. You break your leg. It's terrible. Okay. People come. You're screaming in pain. They take you to the hospital. The doctor's like, yeah, sorry. It's not just broken. It's complete fracture. And we're going to have to do surgery. We're going to attach a rod to your bone. Make sure your bone's going to stick together so you can heal. And there's all these complications. And you're like, great. Wonderful. So my sporting season, that shot, I had to deal with wheelchairs and crutches. It's difficult to use the restroom. We have all these different complications. Guys, that is suffering. That is a trial. Now, are there worse trials? Sure. But this falls into the category of suffering, right? Okay, so you break your leg. What is the main temptation for us when we're in a trial like that? We've broken our leg. We get angry. Now, rhetorical question. What are some of our first temptations?
Yes.
Yell at people around us.
Yell at people around us. Yeah.
Blame God.
Blame God. God, if you're sovereign, why'd you allow this to happen? You could have prevented this. How else do we react?
Because it was our fault.
Yeah. Sometimes we're mad at ourselves. Yeah. Sure. Usually I'd say we complain, we groan, we gripe. We talk about our problems often so other people know about what we're going through. You know, maybe we're tempted with our cast or casts. I don't know, maybe plural. You know, take a picture, Snapgram, whatever. see what I did there. All that stuff. So funny. But we make a big deal of our suffering, right? That's often our temptation. Make a huge deal of what we're going through. Okay, and yeah, the doctor keeps going on. He's talking about physical therapy, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like the Charlie Brown teacher. It's like, whoa, 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 because you're just thinking of the future, everything you're going through. All right, moving on. You're focused about your problems, your fears, your worries. That they consume you. All right, so you spend little or next to nothing often. I'm not saying this would be in your case because you guys would respond perfectly. Most people would barely put, like, any time into thinking about others, okay? Because I'm suffering. I don't have time to think about others. I'm going through my own problems. That is a temptation that we face. Yet, we expect others to care about our situation. We expect others to inquire as to how we're doing about our broken legs for falling down those flight of stairs. You shouldn't have fallen down. Why'd you fall down the flight of stairs? Yeah. And then what happens when we don't get the attention we feel like we deserve? We sometimes we get angry. And we say things to people, we mess up, and it's like causing more additional problems. And we hurt people, and it's just a mess. And oftentimes we don't want to say we're sorry, and we get prideful about it. Guys, that often happens. And we start thinking, well, I wouldn't have said that if I hadn't gone through all this, or if I wasn't sick, or with that, whatever. You know, we rarely take the responsibility to own up to our sin, honestly. All of that we go through. Okay, that is the second temptation for Joseph, I think, in this chapter, that he passes marvelously. But we are tempted to withdraw into ourselves, to get self-centered, to get self-focused. That is the second temptation. Let's see if Joseph does that. Verse 6, and Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly today? Why are you so sad? He asks the question. Now, for anyone else, you know, you can imagine them going, who cares? They're guilty. They actually did something wrong. What is their suffering in comparison with mine? Yet Joseph does not act that way. You can imagine other people going, you know, full Charles Darwin, survival of the fittest, every man for himself here. I'm just trying to take care of my own problems. You can imagine some people just seeing that they're sad and just ignoring. Or, you know, that's awkward. I'm not going to talk to them. I don't want to make it more awkward. So he sees that these two guys are sad, and he asks the question here. I think this is so, so significant. So often we compare ourselves with other people's suffering. Okay, yeah, I'm going through something way worse than that person. Therefore, I have the right to ignore them and more focus on myself. And we really break 2 Corinthians 10:12. Not that we dare to classify or compare ourselves with some of those that are commending themselves. They're just bragging about themselves. But when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding. They're foolish to compare themselves among themselves. Why do with trials then? So people compare, compete. A lot of times people show racism. And think about it this way. There was racism back then just as there is now. Joseph was a Hebrew. They were not Hebrews. They were Egyptians. This is an opportunity for Joseph to say some derogatory remarks. Yet he does not here. Instead, Joseph treats them like human beings. He puts aside his concerns to focus on them first, not himself. And I think this is part of Joseph's character that people admired. I think this is one of those things that the keeper of the prison saw in Joseph, that it was so unnatural, it was so backwards, it was so different, that was one of those things that commended him to the keeper of the prison. So Joseph shows compassion to these men, inquiring why they're sad. Let's continue. Verse 8. And then they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. Okay, back then it was a big thing, like a money-making thing, to say I can interpret dreams. Because if someone has a bad dream, there's always the threat of, well, what if it comes true? If you don't do anything, something might not go well for you. And I can interpret dreams. Tell me the dream. For a small fee, I will tell you what it means. Okay, people did that back then. So there's no professional person to interpret their dreams for them. But what does Joseph say? Do not interpretations belong to God. Tell me them, I pray you. Do not interpretations belong to God? Why is this so significant considering the situation Joseph's in? Why is this so... It should be shocking to us. Mark?
He's worrying about other people's problems, or just helping them.
Okay. Good. So he's compassionate. Why else is this shocking? Yeah?
He's not blaming God.
He's not blaming God. He's not blaming God. Has Joseph's dreams been fulfilled yet? No. They have not. I mean, let's go back to the whole broken leg situation, okay? Let's say, in this terrible example, that, you know, you get the surgery for lead, and maybe the surgeon does something wrong. Nicks an artery. I don't know. Something goes wrong down there. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Maybe something, maybe it's just simply the healing process doesn't go as fast as you'd like. All right, so on top of everything that you're going through and readjusting your life and your schedule and all these different things, let's just say there's complications. And let's just say that, hey, you know, whenever you move, there's pain in your legs. And that brings to mind, if I'm going to pray for anything, it's going to be about my legs. And let's say you've been praying just to heal this whole time. And now there's complications. Okay, are you tempted to just stop praying? Aren't you tempted to have lack of faith that if God's not going to answer my problems, why would God answer someone else's prayers? Then all of a sudden your prayer life's gone. Yet Joseph's like, interpretations belong to God. He's essentially saying that God still has given these two guys dreams, and God is still good, and God still answers prayer. And even though the whole he's going to be above his brothers situation just seems impossible. And he's saying, hey, God can answer their prayers. And on top of that, I was just thinking about this too. Of all the things to talk about, do you think you'd want to talk about dreams? What were his brothers saying when he came off the ravine and it was in Dothan? Remember back in Genesis 37? What's the first thing that they say when they see Joseph from the distance?
Nick. Here comes the dreamer boy.
Here comes the dreamer. All right. Behold, here's this guy. Obviously, they said the statement with attitude. So dreams got him into the pit. Do you think he'd want to talk about dreams? All right, let's keep going. Verse 9, I'm going to read a chunk here, so stay with me. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream, behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine there were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and their blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. So it's like fast forward of how the natural process would go. This would take a while. In his dream, it's like zoop, and he gets grapes, and he can make something from it. It happens very suddenly, just like him suddenly getting out of prison. Sorry for spoiler alert. 11. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and I pressed some into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy palace, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. Okay, so your life's going to go back to normal in 3 days. Okay, this is not some guy making money, because this could be proven wrong in 3 days. All right? Now, about verse 13, there's a little euphemism here. Lift up thine head. That means, back then in Egyptian culture, when you went into the king's presence, okay, you bowed. All right. If you did not bow, and you did not show reverence to the Pharaoh or the king in that situation, snap the fingers, you could be killed. Back then, they would often have a scepter, and they would bring that scepter, and if the guy was bowing, he could lift up by putting it under the chin and literally lift up their head to show that they were given honor and they could proceed forward to talk with the Pharaoh. So that's what he's saying here. Now look at what Joseph says, verses 14 and 15. This is the part where I'm like, man, he is so real. This is so real that he's acting like a human being. Okay, you know, so far he's been this spiritual hero making all these right decisions. This isn't a wrong decision, but this is so human. Look at this, 14 and 15. And you can imagine his voice just getting more intense saying this. He's still talking to the butler. But think on me. When it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. I haven't done anything wrong. Things are going to go well for you in 3 days. Remember me. I showed you this kindness. I interpreted your dream. 16. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, okay, so the other guy went, well, sure, I'd love to tell you my dream. He said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold, I had three white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket, there was all manner of baked meats for the Pharaoh. And the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. And you wonder how long he paused before telling him this. I don't know. Maybe he pressured him to. But eventually says, the three baskets are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head from off thee. Okay, double meaning here. This is in reference to hanging. And shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. This would mean more to an Egyptian than to you, is how they treated bodies back then. It was the sacred honor to treat your body right at death. And here they're eating his flesh. The birds are eating his flesh. Absolute dishonor. 20. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into the Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph. Super sad here. It's like here we're grieved, but forgot him. So the chapter begins and ends with Joseph still in prison. Okay. Now, I want to give an illustration. And this is probably a really weird illustration. Eventually, I'm going to hopefully get this into a question about Joseph. All right. Now, if you've been at this youth group long enough, you pretty much know me pretty well. You know, in regards to music, I'm pretty conservative. Okay. If you're not, whatever. I am. And our church is pretty conservative, too, when we do music for our church. Now, obviously, there can be some differences between how your personal music is and music you worship with. Anyways, you know I'm pretty conservative. So I'm going to give an example of a musician that's not as conservative as I am. Okay, so it's kind of weird for me to give an example from this person. This is not a person that I would just put up on a pedestal and say, hey, be like this person. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. At all. But the person is Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash. One of the greatest country songwriters. He wrote like 1,500 songs. He had like 96 albums. That's crazy. Crazy. Very famous back in the day. All right. A friend of mine recently, fairly recently, a little while ago, said I should listen to one of his songs. Okay, because it's really impactful. It's really powerful. So I did, and it was. It was very impactful. It's very powerful.
What song?
It was the song entitled "Hurt."
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of his top five probably that people know him off of. He didn't actually write the lyrics to the song, but he sang it and became super famous after he sang it. But the lyrics actually match his life really, really well because I don't know how much you know about Johnny Cash, but in his late 20s he got into alcohol and he got into drugs and he got into all these addictions, and for the rest of his life after that, he struggled with those addictions, and he would go to rehabs and clinics, and he would get out, and he'd be sober for a while. He'd be off the drugs, and a few years later, he'd get back on, and he'd have to go back into rehab, and that was kind of his life. It's sad, but there was more reasons than that, but those are two reasons why his first wife left him and divorced him and took the kids. And then he remarried eventually, not too long after that, because he was already seeing a girl. This is why I'm not putting him on a pedestal, okay? When it comes to things that I think that matter, that are morally speaking, he failed, all right? As a songwriter, musician, he's great, and probably the majority of his songs are innocent and great. I speak as a fool because I don't really listen to this guy. But anyways, I listened to this one song called Hurt because this friend encouraged me, and it's depressing, it's cynical. It's about your life after you've had success and all these things go well for you, but you've had problems, you've had addictions, and you've made mistakes, and it's about regret, and that's why it's so powerful and emotional, because it connects to so many people. I'm going to read you most of the lyrics because they are significant, and then ask a question after. So bear with me. Johnny Cash Hurt. I'm not going to sing it. Just going to read the lyrics.
No, I think you should.
I butcher it. Okay. He says, And I'm only going to read 5 stanzas, but I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, that old familiar sting. I think he's referring to drugs there. I think that's him going off into oblivion. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? And this is his chorus, my sweetest friend, and I think he's talking to his wife. Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you hurt. In the very last stanza, he says, if I could start again, 1,000,000 miles away, I would keep myself. I would find a way. When it's so easy to sin, guys, so easy to fall and not get up and to stay fallen and to stay in our sin habits, like Johnny Cash, how did Joseph keep himself? How did Joseph save himself morally? And I think the answer is in the text. So often we've seen the phrase, and God was with Joseph. I think Joseph knew that, because he had seen sudden success in his life. And I think he looked at that and said, you know, this is God. God has been guiding my steps. If God has guided my steps at other points in my life, then he must have something planned in the future. That is where I think Joseph's foundation was for how he could respond so well in all these different situations, and all the variety of different situations, of lust, of bitterness, of anger, of hatred, animosity, all this stuff. And he seems to be responding so well. And he's going to have new trials in the future with power and blessing come a slew of other things. He's going to have the opportunity to snap his fingers and kill all his brothers, to correct all his past people that hurt him. What would you do? What other people normally do if they had that kind of power? And Joseph, again, passes the test and passes that test and passes that test. Because God is good and he trusts in God. We're going to see that in the next chapter. But the question for you is, how do you respond to trials in your life? Do you look at other people's suffering and initiate in their lives? Do you show compassion like Joseph did? Do you ask the question, saying, okay, sure, okay, maybe it'll be awkward, but you do it anyway because it's the right thing to do? Do you care about others when you are suffering? Think about it. And that's it. Thanks for listening.